The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast is joining you October 7th. The Brewers season is over. By now you know this. You watched last Tuesday as the Brewers took on the Washington Nationals in the NL wild card game, endured an absolute heartbreaker of a game. It's been talked about, studied by now. I'm sure this isn't news to anybody. The Brewers falling 4-3 to Washington. They surrender three runs all on one hit, one play in the eighth inning that allowed the Nationals to take the lead. The Brewers were ahead 3-1. And, of course, it was Juan Soto's two-run single. The ball gets by Trent Grisham in right field, allowing Anthony Rendon to score all the way from first. And that is how it ended. The Brewers putting together a great game plan, had everything working for them right up until Josh Hader struggled getting through the eighth. And the error thrown in there, and the Brewers walk away from Washington with their season ended. And just a really tough way to end the 2019 season. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. We're going to be joined shortly here by Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter. He was out in Washington, D.C. watching that game unfold. I was there too, as it turns out, but we'll be talking a little bit about the game. But again, like we said, by now you know a little bit about how that went, for sure. You've thought about it, probably had a hard time watching the playoffs unfold, the Nationals falling behind 2-1 to the Dodgers, but winning in L.A., so I'm sure that was a difficult thing for some Brewers fans to take in. But we'll also talk about what is ahead for the Milwaukee Brewers, and we've got a lot to unpack, and probably more than we can really do here in just one podcast. But we'll get into some of the big situations, big decisions facing this team, which realistically should be able to sort of maintain this level. They've been able, really without a series of frontline starting pitchers, have been able to succeed dramatically in 2018 and 2019, making the playoffs both times. First Brewers back-to-back playoff appearances since 1981, 1982. It's only the second time in franchise history, of course, that they've been able to do that. So they've been able to do it without those frontline starters. Will they continue to try and operate that way? It seems like this would be, again, a good time to go out and try to sign a frontline starting pitcher, but we've seen General Manager David Stearns operate for a little while now. We recognize that that might not be exactly how he thinks of things. And even if he does address the starting rotation, is it going to be somebody again like Yoli Chacin a couple years ago? Is it going to be one of those under-the-radar guys who might contribute, might not? It doesn't seem like a slam dunk that they're going to go after starting pitching, even though for many people that seems like a no-brainer. There are other openings on the diamond that have to be addressed. Catcher, if Yasmani Grandal moves on, as everyone expects he will, who are they going to get to catch this rotation that relied pretty heavily on the framing abilities of Yasmani Grandal to sort of steal some strikes here and there, turn out to be a very effective tool that every starter seemed to rave about. So that's something to think about. Third base with Mike Moustakas moving on and Travis Shaw having such a rough year in 2019. Will they find somebody there? Is Orlando Arcia still definitely the guy at shortstop? Is the first base situation going to be Eric Thames and somebody else in a platoon? Would Ryan Braun be a guy to go there? He had a pretty good year hitting the ball, Ryan Braun did. So does he stay in the outfield? I mean, what's next for all these positions? It feels like there are a lot of openings. Of course, the relief corps is a little bit unsettled, even though ideally Corey Knebel would come back to some form of what he was in 2019 and help hammer things down there. They were able to put together a pretty solid bullpen by the end of the year. Drew Pomeranz, guy that we saw in that wild card game, is another big free agent question mark. He was here for a couple months and would seemingly be in line for a pretty big payday given how he performed for the Brewers down the stretch and as a reliever. Will the Brewers be the team to pay him? Those are some interesting questions that I'd like to get to with Tom Hodricourt, and without further ado, let's do it. Here he is, Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. As I just said, he was in Washington, D.C., watching this wild card heartbreaker for the Milwaukee Brewers. We won't spend a lot of time talking about the game itself because I obviously want to talk more about what's to come in the offseason here. But as we look back at this Nats game, one thing that does interest me, because Josh Hader and Trent Grisham are so front and center with how that went wrong, with Hader struggling in the eighth, Grisham committing the error that allows the go-ahead run to score. Sometimes things like this happen, and it sticks with players for the rest of their careers, and they have a hard time overcoming that. I tend to think, just knowing the demeanor of those two guys, that that's not going to happen here. Grisham, being as young as he is, has a lot of years left in his career to contribute, and Hader does too, for that matter, and is still one of the best relief pitchers in baseball, even though people are down on him. What do you think about that? Do you see this as something that could potentially, you know, hurt these guys going into 2020 and beyond, or how do you evaluate that?
Yeah, I don't see it being a factor. Probably stuck with him for a few days. But, you know, Hader's got, like, the perfect personality. He's never any different whether he saves the game or blows the game. He's never different, hardly ever. And so, you know, I also think he knows, you know, he probably did not get a call on HBP that looked like it hit the bat. He also exploded Ryan Zimmerman's bat. And it blooped in for a base hit. If that goes to somebody, the inning's over, and probably the game's over. So I think he realized. He also knows that he did not have good command. And I just wonder, you know, as I watch some of these postseason games, JR, and like that St. Louis Atlanta game today, I just wonder what's left of all of these bullpens. They get used so much, except for Washington's. They hate theirs so bad that they won't even use them.
It's true. Know? And still they win 90-some games.
Yeah, we're in the playoffs, but our bullpen stinks. We admit it, and we're just not going to use them. You know, so, but everybody else, you know, we've seen some other Atlanta-St. Louis series. They're having all kinds of trouble, both sides getting the last three outs. You know, so it's not just you sometimes you can't look past your own nose and you say, oh, our closer struggles, nobody else's does. Yes, everybody else's does. Ask the Cubs about, you know, closing games and protecting leads. You know, so, you know, Hader had a couple of tough ones. I believe before that game in Colorado that Saturday night when he gave up the home run to the immortal Sam Hilliard, and I believe he had saved 12 straight games. So, you know, once he had that home run, that tremendous home run hiccup in the middle of the year, and he figured he needed to use a slider more, I'm pretty sure he had saved 12 in a row before he blew that one save in Colorado. So he finished with two tough ones, but look at his numbers. I mean, they're pretty amazing. Strikeout saves, batting average, you know, he's still one of the best guys in baseball.
We talked about this in Washington, but really a good microcosm of Josh Hader's season was in another game against the Nationals, that 15-14 game in August, where he gave up the lead, loaded the bases with nobody out, and then struck out the Nationals' top three hitters in the lineup to force extra innings. The Brewers go on to win that game in 14 innings, I believe, 13-14, I'm not even sure anymore, but that was a good example of Josh Hader sometimes gets blown up, and then he rallies back, and he's as good a strikeout pitcher as we have in baseball. And I think there's right now sort of a fan sentiment that Josh Hader isn't as good as we thought he was. But I really hope fans, as the pain of this game fades, understand he really is very good. He's really about 40%, 45% better than the average relief pitcher. And even though it finished like it did with some memorable losses, it shouldn't take away from the fact that the Brewers still have something very special with this guy.
Right. He's not as good as you thought he was if you thought he was perfect. You know, because nobody is. And so, you know, he did give up more home runs this year, but we know why. He did his best to fix it. He was in a pretty good stretch there. In September, he was saving games with regularity. He was a big reason why they made the playoffs to begin with. You know, they found a formula there at the end where they had, you know, Suter, Pomerantz, Hader, and occasionally Jay Jackson and Junior Guerra added in. And that turned out to be a pretty good formula. They won a lot of games doing it.
Yeah, I think the frustration that a lot of people probably feel about this game is in trying to point to the thing that went wrong, there really is nothing to point to. This formula could not have worked more perfectly. Four great innings out of Brandon Woodruff. They managed to get three runs off of Max Scherzer. And I know that, you know, it's easy to say, well, they should have scored more and they had opportunities. But yeah, Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg are not going to give up those runs for free. Those are very tough guys to get additional runs against. They gave Brent Suter an inning. Drew Pomeranz was great for two. I know there's some sentiment that he could have pitched a third. I didn't see it. I thought in the moment they did everything right. It just plain old didn't work out. Broken bat single, things that just went against them.
You know, I've had the toughest time convincing some people, especially on social media, that you can make a good decision and it not work, you know. And they think that doesn't make sense, that it had to have been a bad decision if it didn't work. Well, that's not true. Good decision. Doing things the way you ought to be doing. These guys are human. You know, the other guys are trying to win, too. The guys with the bats in their hands are trying to win, too. You can make the correct decision, and sometimes it just doesn't work.
It's true. So now they head into the offseason, and we've seen now 2 years in a row, talking about this bullpen, the way that they've operated, where particularly in September, they really limit what we've seen from starters. And we've talked about this a bunch of times, and I've even asked this very same question. If the calculus of the offseason changes, knowing that we won't have what we had the last several years, where everybody on your 40-man roster can play in September, somewhat enabling them to use this strategy and to have guys, you know, to pitch just about everybody, build depth on your 40-man roster, major league-ready guys who could pitch out of the bullpen and use them liberally. Now, you'll still be able to use 28 guys in September next year, so I still think there's room to use this strategy to a degree. But as you look ahead, and I look all the way ahead, I guess, to next September, knowing that things are going to change, do you think that the offseason strategy changes at all for David Stearns and this Brewers front office?
Well, the guys you aren't going to be able to carry next year are the guys that pitch in the mop-up games. You know, you're not going to be able to carry the pitchers that pitched at the end of 10-0 wins and 10-0 losses, because when you only carry 28, and let's see also if they cap it at 14 pitchers. You know, there's a sentiment to make it be 14 and 14, or else teams are just going to carry 16 pitchers and 12 position players, and we're right back where we started. You know, so. If they do cap it at 14 pitchers, you're not going to be able to carry the superfluous guys, you know. And so that's where you're going to get hurt, is you're going to have to use some of the real high leverage guys in games that get away, because you're just not going to have the extra guys. Because let's face it, you're going to keep the good guys. You're not going to keep the superfluous guys. So it'll be interesting to see. I specifically asked David Stearns Friday at the season-ending presser, how do you judge your team 25-man roster-wise versus 40-man roster-wise? They didn't do that great with 25 players. They were just a little over 500. Then when they got to 40 players, they went way over 500. So, you know, it's I've said it before. I'll use my analogy one more time. They treaded water for 5 months, and then the 6th month they swam like Michael Phelps. You know, so how do you judge a team like that? And if you are not allowed to add a whole bunch of guys the last month, will you be as successful? I think we can safely say, and the records bear it out, that Craig Counsell is the best manager in the major leagues at handling an expanded roster.
Yeah, and I'll be curious to see as other teams start to follow what the Brewers have done, and we've seen it. I mean, Tampa Bay is really the trailblazer here, but you've got teams like the Yankees even experimenting in this direction. Will other managers catch up to this philosophy? Will they be able to figure it out, crack the code of how to best deploy their bullpen and use every guy that they've got? We'll have 26-man rosters during the first 5 months of the season next year, so that's probably an extra bullpen arm in most cases. I'll be really curious to see how that happens. One way you'd like to think the Brewers could combat that is to invest more aggressively in starting pitching. That's something that the Brewers have not done under David Stearns the last couple years. They brought in guys like Yoli Chacin, but sort of off the radar, you know, below the radar guys who might be a little bit more bargain purchases, for lack of a better term. I kind of think we've seen the track record that shows David Stearns is not going to go after any of the top starting pitchers, that he's got something that works here and he's going to stick to it. Do you think that's true, or do you think something changes and they really try to pursue some of the top flight starting pitchers that are going to be out there?
Yeah, the top starting pitcher he might go after is Jordan Lyles.
Yeah, that's true, no doubt.
I mean, they were 10-1 when he pitched. Did any other pitcher have his team go 10-1 in his last 11 starts this year? I'm guessing nobody did. Maybe it just comes down to keeping what you got. Then you get Woodruff back. You know, I think Hauser has a chance to be a real solid pitcher. Zach Davies quietly had a very good year. Chase Anderson had a better year than the year before. They have a co option on him, so they can keep him if they want. Just in-house, you know, I think they like the guys they got. Whether they ever give Freddie Peralta and Corbin Burns shots at starting again, I don't know. And let's wait and see what they do with Brent Suter, too. Do you return him to starting, or was he so daggone successful in what he did in September that's just the way you use him from now on? You know, it's nice to have those type of decisions to make. So we'll see. We'll see what they do as far as picking up any pitching from the outside. But I'm not expecting any big starting pitching moves. I think they kind of like with the group that they have. And if they do find a way to keep Jordan Lyles, I think they'll be very happy with the group they have.
I was definitely going to ask about both Brent Suter and Corbin Burns. And I think the ship may have sailed on Freddie Peralta. I feel like he has shown a comfort in the bullpen and sort of an just wasn't able to stay consistent as a starter, and I think that might be his destiny here. But Corbin Burns is a legitimate head scratcher, and really Brent Suter is kind of as well in the other direction. So effective after coming back from Tommy John surgery that maybe that bullpen role, a guy who could come in and just throw 2-3 innings, is perfect for him. Although I still think he could start, so that's possibly something they've got to think about. But Corbin Burns, man, I don't even know. I mean, you're talking about a guy who was one of the brightest young stars in the organization this time last year, and now you wonder, does he even have a roster spot? What do you, I mean, can you look in your crystal ball at all and try to guess what happens with him next?
No.
That's a Zach Greinke answer. No.
Next.
That's fine. That's fair.
How can you? They have to decide, first of all, what they want to do with them next spring, start or relieve. And then, you know, I don't think you can say he's making the team in the spring. You know, I think he has to pitch great in the spring to make it, or he just needs to go back to AAA and reset. But I don't know. I mean, how do you know what you got in him? You know, he failed badly as a starter, and then after they moved him to relief, maybe he was just broken by then and it wasn't going to matter, you know. So, you know, a flat tire is a flat tire no matter whether you try to drive the car 3 miles or 3 blocks, right? It's a flat tire. It's not going to work. So I don't know. I'm sure I'm guessing they're going to talk a lot about him. I know one thing, JR. He's got too good of an arm and too good of stuff to just be thrown into the dumpster. I mean, they've got to just figure out what's the best way to salvage him.
Right, and obviously young enough, and he's not going to be overly expensive at this stage of his career. So there's no doubt the Brewers are going to continue to invest in him. Corey Knebel theoretically should be back in that bullpen, and I think that probably will, if he's back to some sort of that 2019 form or 2018 form, I should say. I would guess that they try to use him in more of a traditional closer's role, or at least a guy that you like for that end of the game, ninth inning situations, and have Josh Hader switch more back into what we saw in 2018, where he's a guy you can call in the seventh or the eighth. It didn't really seem like they were, you know, prohibiting anything for themselves by having Hader work primarily save situations in 2019. It seemed like he was in there in all the right spots, but I imagine Knebel is going to be a big factor in what comes next for this bullpen. And might even inform what they do with Drew Pomeranz. We saw him in this wild card game. He's one of the many free agent conversations that the Brewers are going to have. I certainly think he's made himself a lot of money as a reliever. How heavily do you think the Brewers are going to try to chase him and bring him back next year?
Yeah, I'm sure they'd like to, but he's probably going to go out on the market. Teams like the Brewers generally tell players, go out on the market, see what you got, come back to us and let us know, and we'll see if we want to like get involved or not. So the market has to establish itself. And let's face it has not been fantastic the last couple of years. Now, having said that, if Drew Pomeranz wants to package himself as the new and improved Andrew Miller, I think he's going to get some multi-year offers, you know, at pretty decent money. So he's 30 years old. You know, I told him that if he's going to be a left-handed reliever the rest of his career, he might have 15 more years in there. You know, there's lots of relievers, lefty relievers, that pitch well into their 40s. So let's just see what happens with him. But, man, you got to believe he set himself up pretty good on the market by the way he pitched. And all credit to him, and maybe he's just found a new role for himself now. But he sure was good for them. He was Josh Hader 2.0. You know, he had the same kind of strikeout rate that Josh Hader had. So be interesting to see what happens with him. He may become too expensive. And I'm not sure the Brewers are big believers in multi-year, big-dollar contracts for relievers to begin with.
I agree with that. You know, pitching coaches probably get an unfair amount of credit or blame all the way around. There was definitely a point this year where everyone was wringing their hands about Derek Johnson not being here anymore. But then you look at Pomeranz, you look at Jordan Lyles, Freddy Peralta to a degree when he was just a bullpen guy down the stretch. And these guys found something. And I don't know if you can credit or not credit Chris Hook for it, but it certainly should be on his resume that that these guys figured it out down the stretch. Of course, if we're talking about free agent signings, there's two big ones, and even bigger than Drew Pomeranz, and that's Yasmani Grandal at catcher, Mike Moustakas at third base. Fascinating cases, both of them, because the market did not develop for those guys last year, and that really helped the Brewers get them on one-year deals. Same thing with Pomeranz. We assume there's a market out there for them that, you know, that they'll be commanding pretty good money, multi-year deals going forward, especially for Grandal, but these guys are in their 30s. Is it, I don't know, I guess, what, how would you handicap that? What are the odds that these guys, one or the other, or even both of them, come back to the Brewers next year?
It's so hard to handicap stuff like that, because what's going to be offered from the outside, you know? It's not like, they're not operating in a vacuum, you know? That's I've already seen some rumor that said the Reds are going to make a big push for Grandal, so... You know, maybe they liked the way their pitching moved forward last year, but they weren't real thrilled with the catching, and they figured they get a Grandal in there, it's going to help them even more. And they look like they are thinking bigger than they used to. I think the Trevor Bauer trade tells us that. So, you know, he's a catcher, but, you know, analytics haven't been kind to 30-year-old catchers. Let's see how high anybody's willing to go. But in many ways, that was the best year of his career. He played in 153 games also, JR, 153. That's a lot of games. Not all of them were catching, but most of them were. And so he proved himself as a durable guy too. And unlike the previous year with the Dodgers, where he was really fading at the end of the year, he was not fading at the end of the year with the Brewers.
Hit the big two-run homer to give the Brewers the lead in that wild card game. He had everything. He's renowned for his pitch framing. He maybe isn't the best at stopping balls to the backstop, for sure, but didn't really hurt them badly defensively many times this year.
Yeah, that wasn't a big problem for him this year. I think he had 8 pass balls in 130 games behind the plate. You know, so that wasn't a big problem for him.
No,
he did a pretty good job defensively, you know. Threw out guys about 28%. That's usually what he does, right? That was right on his career average. So, he did fine defensively. I know one thing. Jordan Lyles couldn't stop talking about getting the pitch to him after he came to the Pittsburgh catchers probably needed therapy after they heard Jordan Lyles talk about how much fun he had pitching to Yasmani Grandal.
Yeah, I think the Reds would be smart to bring him in. He is sort of the piece that they don't have yet. They've invested in a lot of – this past offseason was big for them, and now maybe they're taking a step forward. That would be bad news for the Brewers. In addition to these free agent decisions, they've got some non-tender candidates as well. Travis Shaw and Jimmy Nelson are kind of two of the more fascinating cases. We've talked about both these guys a lot, and the postseason presser didn't give me a lot of optimism that they were really, really going to bring Travis Shaw back. It didn't sound promising based on the language that was used by David Stearns. As far as those two guys, do you think that the Brewers are just going to be ready to move on, or maybe they give it one more shot?
I think it's possible they fall into the Hernan Perez category. Last year, he was an arbitration guy. They offered him a pre-tender deal and basically said, take it or you get non-tendered. Well, that makes offers look a lot more attractive than they would otherwise, you know, especially with the way the free agent market has gone the last few years. So it wouldn't surprise me that with both those players, Shaw and Nelson, they made them pretender, smaller money deals than they were making this year and said, this is our offer. Otherwise, you're going to go out on the market. So then you got to, then how much confidence do you have in yourself out on the market? You know, Shaw's coming off the worst year that probably anybody had in the league. And Jimmy Nelson still is trying to prove that he can pitch again effectively after 2 years of coming back from a terrible shoulder injury. So, you know, I don't know what their confidence level is in themselves right now. Probably not what it would normally be. So, going to be interesting. There might be a few other non-tender candidates too. This is a very fascinating offseason for the Brewers because they have a lot. You know, no Brewer team has ever gone to the playoffs three straight years. If they want to be the first to do it, they've got a lot of decisions to make, and they've mostly got to work out for them.
Yeah, third base and catcher are two of the biggies. Shortstop's an interesting one. Again, this is a topic we've touched on a few times, but Orlando Arcia defensively was able to rebound and have a really nice season, I thought. He hit well down the stretch, but overall, he's one of the worst offensive players in baseball. There's no getting around it. He might be the worst based on what metrics you're looking at, you know, what counts as qualified, that sort of thing. He's not a good player in terms of the offensive picture if he's going to be there starting the majority of games next year. But there are so many other openings, I'm not sure the Brewers are going to be as motivated to look at an upgrade at shortstop unless it answers maybe what's happening at third base. I don't think they can really afford to do a whole lot of looking around. How do you see that, though? Do you think that they're going to investigate moving on from Orlando Arcia?
Well, their internal options are not there, you know it. They don't have a shortstop ready to come in and take his job, unless I'm missing something. So I'm guessing he'll get another shot, you know, unless they pull off some unforeseen deal in which a shortstop comes back to them. And like that would be like kind of some big trade. I don't know. I don't think it would be a trade just for a shortstop. I think it might be like something bigger that a shortstop comes back to them. And otherwise, you know, I think they can say this kid's still young and we think he can get better. Now it hasn't happened yet, you know, and so we'll see. You know, sometimes you just gotta, you know, all fans want their team to be perfect at every position. There's not many of those teams around, you know, so I think they consider third base and catching a way higher priority than getting a new shortstop.
And first base is interesting too. The internal options are there in this case if they choose them to be. Eric Thames has a club option that I think they'll probably exercise. As you mentioned, the Chase Anderson option, I think the Brewers will exercise that one as well. And that would give them a first base option, certainly against right-handers. My thought was that Ryan Braun would be a natural platoon partner, moving him from left field, giving a spot to Trent Grisham, and then, you know, he would be the right-handed side of that platoon. But Ryan Braun had a really good offensive year. I don't think that we're quite at the point in his career where you bury him in a platoon and just give him a few starts, a couple starts a week if he's healthy. It seems like he's a guy that probably should be playing quite a bit, and the outfield might be the best spot for that. I don't know yet. So as far as that goes, do you see the Brewers making a move at first base, or are the components pretty much already in this organization?
Yeah, I don't think they have to go get a first baseman. You know, if they you know, Thames gives you the left-handed hitter there, and then you find the right-handed hitter, whether it's Braun, whether you give Tyler Austin a shot at it. You just can't go change six positions, you know. It's just not very feasible to do it, especially with their budget. So I think there's other priorities. You know, Eric Thames had, you know, I know some people who said some people told me they didn't think he did much. He did pretty good. You know, he did pretty good. Look at his numbers again. He did pretty good. And so if you find a right-handed hitter to platoon with him at first, you know, it was Jesus Aguilar until he played so poorly they got rid of him. So I think that they can do stuff internally to fill there. But I do think, you know, Ryan Braun will be 36 next year and Lorenzo Cain will be 34. I do think, you know, they'll look for days to give them rest their legs out of the outfield. I do think, you know, well, I was going to say, I do think Trent Grisham comes into play there. I mean, David Stern just flat out said he expects Trent Grisham to have a prominent role on the team next year.
Yeah, I would expect that as well. He should be getting plenty of at bats. Tyler Austin, I hadn't even thought about him as a possible a guy who makes this roster next year. We really only saw the one big moment out of him, but I guess I shouldn't discount him. He could be part of the picture. I'm sure there's a few other guys that that I might be discounting as well. So just before we get out of here, all these things we've talked about, what's the one thing that you're most intrigued by? The move that the Brewers you think have to consider first and foremost, or the thing that you know might really be the biggest part of this offseason that that the Brewers have to address?
It's got to be catcher, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it does. Yep.
I mean, who's going to catch? If Yasmani Grandal's in there, who's going to catch? Manny Pena's a backup catcher. You know, they've decided that. They don't have a catcher. Jacob Nottingham's not ready to come up and be an everyday catcher. They don't have one. They have some pretty good-looking catchers down in their system, but we're a few years away from them. It's got to be catcher. I mean, look at the impact he had this year. I think both offensively and defensively. So if they can't keep Grandal, they've got to find the next best thing they can find.
It's such a challenge because catchers deteriorate so quickly. I mean, like you said, he played in almost every game this year, and I know he played a lot at first base, but we've seen a lot of guys. Joe Mauer is the one that immediately jumps to mind, who are among the best at their position for many years in a row, and then all of a sudden it just goes away like that. So you just can't give a catcher a 5-year deal, a 4-year deal, even though you know you're probably going to get two pretty great years at the minimum out of that. And it's going to be hard for this team if they don't get Grandal back to go from legitimately one of the best catchers in baseball, and there is an argument to be made that he is the best, to just a run-of-the-mill guy. It's going to be a really tough step down, and we saw how big he was in September down the stretch. Like, he could not have been bigger for them this year. That's a very tough situation for them to work through.
I know one thing. If Grandal signs elsewhere early in the free agent market, I'd like to be Scott Boras representing Mike Moustakas at that point.
Yes. Yeah, I think they'll find a way to bring him back. Enough goodwill here. I could see them finding, maybe even operating on that mutual option they've got. I don't know. It seems like there's enough at play where they could bring Moose back at third base, but I don't know. It's going to be fascinating, Tom. I don't know when we'll talk next, but there's going to be, I'm sure, a lot of Brewers news to discuss into especially once we get into December. So, we will touch base again soon. Thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks, JR.
Thanks to Tom for joining me again. Not sure when our next Brewers podcast is going to come at you. Probably not for a few weeks. Like to let the dust settle a little bit. We'll watch the postseason unfold. If, like I said earlier, if you are still the type who mind watching after the Brewers have been eliminated from the postseason, we'll let it unfold and maybe we can come back to talking Brewers a little bit in November or December. If there's news that breaks and there's some transactions of some sort, we'll probably get the gang together and do a little podcasting about it when that happens. Until then, there's definitely some things we'll still want to be talking about as this offseason unfolds, some of the storylines we touched on today. Will certainly be things that we're watching in the offseason as well. But like I said, not sure when we'll come at you next. Obviously, the best thing you could do is subscribe to this podcast. If you have not done so already, you will get a new episode on your phone as soon as we bring you something new. You can find us, of course, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. Thanks for tuning in here in 2019. It's a bummer that we don't have more baseball to talk about like we did at this time last year, but we do appreciate all the listeners joining us this year on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. Like I said, we're not leaving you for good, just for a couple weeks, and we will catch you again as soon as something interesting happens. Thanks for tuning in. Talk to you then.